Anybody home?
What kind of party is this, anyway?
A very strange party, if you'll pardon the expression.
Radio General Erko.
Yes, sir, but that's not what's so peculiar.
Put it on the bridge speakers, Lieutenant.
Pay more attention.
DJ 7 L.
I thought it might be static, but not on every channel. Tend to sound like...
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
Hill.
Hear me and hear me.
Wait a minute, what's that?
I demand an explanation.
Look at that one, bigger than the rest. He looks like...
Invasion by creatures from space confirmed. New York City may be the next objective.
Just stop.
And get out of here.
Strange.
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
Listen to this.
Welcome to the Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
You guys are a fucking dream to work with, and like, working with you dudes has been awesome, and you are the, and again, I've said this to you before, but I feel like saying it publicly, you guys are like the fucking band that fits us the best as far as like that whatever the fuck we feel like doing, you know, kind of attitude that this place
yeah.
has. Like, that's you guys that turned into a fucking band.
I'm proud that you feel that way. That's awesome to hear. Honestly, we're trying to just like work with people that we believe in, you know. Spencer was always like, we need a Holy Mountain store. And I was like, yeah, but I'm scared to have more than one store. And then we realized it didn't matter. And here we are.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, it's easy to work with you too. It's a breeze.
No, it's great.
Because it makes sense.
Not just are you guys easy to deal with and, you know, like, but like literally you guys fit to a T. Like, yeah, I mean, like if I was going to be like, there's a band that exemplifies what we're trying to do here, it's you dudes.
That's awesome. I'm so stoked to be that band.
I mean, all the bands here are awesome, but like, you guys are the one for me.
But we're better than the rest of them.
You're better than the rest. No, it's just you guys. Like, I mean, you look at this place and it almost makes no sense. Like, I guess it's not a matter of like what bands are better than the others. It's like, but the other ones I can kind of like quantify where they belong. Like, and when you look, I mean, look at this place from the outside sometimes, and I'm like, oh, I'll bet people wonder what the fuck is going on.
It's funny that you say that, because I'm going to draw another parallel. It's hard to have like a neutral perspective on like a group that, you know, is your family, is part of like who you are. But in working with like people like Justin and stuff who work with us really closely, like in the last year or so, and hearing what they think about us as a group when they get around us, I've tried to step back and look at us too, and we're like a bunch of mismatched freaks. Like, it's, I love it. But like, when I watch those guys walk into a room, those three, I'm just like, well, look at these fucking freaks. Like, Sam is just like, looks like a burn up hippie dude with a skateboard. And Dave's just wearing like some like Gucci shit or something, some kind of like really expensive name brand stuff that he has no business having. And Spencer just looks like some strange noise guy, you know? I love how mismatched I feel like we all look together. I don't know. And it just works really well as far as like how we communicate with each other and how we get along. I feel like we're not like trying to wear a uniform or anything, you know? Everybody just kind of wears whatever they want and looks how they want. But in that way, maybe there's another parallel, because it's just kind of like it's about what it's about, you know? It doesn't have to be – it's just what we like, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the same thing here. Like, we shift from day to day.
Yeah.
And then as people come in, shit changes. Like, Joel coming in, well, now we're Gundam dudes. Like, you know, because it's now not just my bullshit, it's his bullshit. You know, like, so we're all, like, adding our own stuff in and changing. And that's exactly what you guys are doing. You're like four dudes with different backgrounds and different tastes and coming together and making something special.
And we've talked about this before, you and me, but like, how electrifying and inspiring is it to see a customer of yours, or like, you know, a person that likes Fool of Hell, get into something adjacent that you like, that you've purposefully, you know, folded into your business. And now, like, this kid that was just into Fool of Hell and maybe like a few other things in your store, like maybe he was like really into Leviathan or something, then he discovers that he likes comic books, or he discovers that he likes Twin Peaks through your store, like some other media that's like truly inspiring to you. Because I get that feeling sometimes when I see kids that, you know, at this point that we kind of grew up seeing come to our shows, like over the past 10 years, that like I watched the day they got it, that the first day they'd ever seen anybody do anything with noise at all. You know, maybe it was us, maybe it was somebody else on the bill. And I watched how stoked they were about it. And then they start making their own noise. And now they're just like, years later, now they're just like, it's defined them. And it was all chance that they happened to come across it. You know, I think a website like yours, like a company like yours, is important because it's got a lot of like linking points that you can just, I don't know. It just like opens up new worlds for kids, I think, to have lots of different stuff that you're into in one spot.
I think all that weird stuff has parallels. So it's like, it's not a stretch. Absolutely. Like if you like metal, you might like,
no, it makes sense.
The likelihood you'll like comics or toys or, you know, kaiju movies. It's all like fairly close. And even though it doesn't look like it, it really is. Like the number of metal dudes that like kaiju films is like staggering at this point. Like, which
it's
you guys,
insane.
That's something that we saw, like Justin, when he went on
that
tour with you
Godzilla
guys,
shirt.
Yeah, said that he had kids coming up saying that that shirt was their entry point into discovering that genre of film, which is crazy.
Isn't that the coolest thing ever? Like, what more could you ever want?
Right. You guys made a shirt, and now
it's
kids
awesome.
Like, you know, old movies with dudes in giant rubber suits smashing fake cities. I mean, it's wonderful.
I mean, honestly, there's like nothing more I would want as far as like communication between people goes and like the social aspect of this music stuff than to see a kid get into something that I'm into, you know, through my little band. And it like, you know, opens, I don't know, it just opens their world. They find something that they were missing that they love. You know what I mean? Because that's what it's about, like that passion, figuring that shit out. I don't know. I think when you have like a thing that just spans a lot of different worlds, I think the possibilities are there to kind of really open people up to a lot of new things.
Right.
It's really cool.
I agree. And I love, like, again, we've talked about it, but when I see a kid order a Leviathan shirt, an Earth Crisis shirt, a Full of Hell shirt, and a toy or a comic or something, and that happens all the time. Seeing kids order these very disparate things in the same, you know, for the same person, that's so fucking cool to see. Like, to know that there's some other nutcase out there.
You're like, yeah.
Right. It makes me feel like I'm not the weirdo. Like, yeah, like, oh, yeah, this other guy likes the same weird shit I like in its seemingly unconnected ways.
Yeah, that's like pure energy, man. I feed off that. I think it's really cool.
Well, you guys are doing that for kids out there every day, too. So that's one of those other parallels. Like you said, you guys are doing the same thing. You're opening kids up that found you guys and then found noise or found, you know, like, further into death metal or grind, like Immolation, like with you guys touring with them. I'm sure you opened, you know, as much as you opening for them, I'm sure was, you know, like an honor for you guys. I'm sure that you also, you know, like opened your fans up to those dudes or, you know, where they might have missed that because that's old men music, you know?
Yeah, I'll never forget touring before we toured with Immolation and Sepultura, and like, young kids would come up to me on this other tour we were on and just like, you know, they knew it was like a really cool thing that we were doing, but maybe I could just tell they didn't listen to these bands. Sometimes it was more obvious than others. Like, I get a kid that would just be like, dude, I see you're opening for Sepultura. That's insane. And I would just be like, yeah, thanks, man. It's pretty, pretty amazing. And I you don't want to make somebody feel bad, 'cause like everybody learns at some point, you know, me too. But it was definitely funny to like see younger kids. They want to be stoked, but maybe they're just like not super familiar, you know, no matter how big of a band it is. That tour was,
and you don't want to stifle them by being like an elitist asshole. And
no,
being like, no dude, it's Sepultura.
No gatekeeping bullshit at all. Like, I think I would hope that Full of Hell becomes the poster child for anti-gatekeeping and anti-gate creeper. I have a lot of trouble saying gatekeeper sometimes because that shit's so ingrained in my brain. But like, we're kind of like, we kind of like dip our toes in like whatever way we want into a bunch of genres, and maybe not do any of the genres in like a super pure way because we're just not interested. And so like, you know, we could be called posers by any scene in any scene in like aggressive music, really. So I feel like because of that, we kind of have like dented egos maybe a little more than usual. And it's like humbled us in a way where like, we're kind of just in it for expanding kids' minds and just like doing what we want. And like, I don't want any kid to feel like they're not welcome at a show just because they've never heard of, you know, Harsh Noise Wall or like Gore Grind or something. Like, fuck that. Let them experience something new. I just don't even understand where the, how the elitism like comes into play in like a, in a, in a way where someone's like consciously like, yeah, I'm going to be a dickhead to people that don't know everything I know.
I get
like,
it. To
I
a
think
point,
there's something
like,
to be said for having a lot of knowledge.
Right.
I don't know. You just
I think
be
when
open.
It
just
becomes
like,
something so some like kid. Special like that, people get protective of it. And I think that's where it,
and I appreciate
in
that,
an ill-advised way, you end up an elitist cocksucker. Like,
and dude, I was way more like that when I was younger. I think it was like partially because I wanted to prove myself to the world. I had some chip where I was just like, I got to do this thing. All I want to do is play shows. I got to know what the fuck I'm talking about. Fuck everybody else. This is all poser shit. When in reality, like, I was just as big a poser as any other kid out there, if not more. And I had no business. Thankfully, I can't think offhand of any time I ever made a kid feel bad, ever, for not knowing something. But all my friends did all the time, and like, I don't know. That shit's so whack, man. Like, I don't know. And the more people I met over the years that are like guys I look up to, the more I'm realizing, I realized like that is like the wrong perspective to have. And I understand wanting to like safeguard something that's so important to you. And I have full respect for the guys that like, you know, they're all over the Metallum. They like know everything about every demo ever. And like, that's fucking cool. There's like, that's a really cool part of metal is like, knowing your scene and like knowing the history. The history is really important, but I don't know for it to grow and thrive, it needs to have new people, and I think art's for everybody, so you know, whatever, fuck that attitude.
Right, I agree 100%. It's just one of the, I can see where it happens though, like I can, as someone who takes this shit super serious and loves this shit genuinely, I can see how you end up in that place. I mean, and I'm sure when I was younger, I was every bit of the fucking cocksucker that we're talking about on some level. Like, but,
and the thoughts still cross my mind. I think there's like a difference. Like, I just don't act on it. Like, I'll definitely chuckle at something internally if like some kid like says something really goofy or something, but there's a difference between like an internal monologue and then like,
right,
you know, actively making some kid feel bad because he called some like, you know, metalcore band a death metal band. Or something, you know, because that happens a lot nowadays.
Right.
But whatever.
I didn't have anybody when I was a kid to like, I grew up in the dinkiest little fucking town. So I didn't know the difference Same. Between shit. So like
me neither.
Slayer was, it had punk stickers on their guitars and were in Thrasher magazine. So I mean, to me, it was all like, I didn't have a name for any of it really. It was, and then I met kids from bigger cities when I got older and that, you know, kind of had like, well, that's the bad album and this is the fucking, this is when they fell off or whatever,
and then you learn.
Yeah, but
it's like a cultural like awakening almost. It's like, oh shit, I'm like way behind.
Right,
I had the same
I
experience.
Was grateful for it. Like, I think it's why, you know, like why my tastes are so varied, like because I didn't have anybody to tell me, well, you can't like that record because it's the bad record. Like, which would have, if someone tells you in advance that, you know, it's a preconceived notion. It's easy to,
then you know better. Yeah.
Right.
It's kind of better off for you because you got a really unbiased look at some stuff that you didn't know if it was good or not. So you got to make it up your mind for yourself.
Yeah. I like lots of the wrong
albums. I'm glad I had that experience too. I had it even worse because I had a small town. I mean, Our age difference is probably telling there because, like, I guess you probably – did you have, like, internet when you were a kid, though, either? Like,
No. I'm
probably not
extremely
when you were
old.
Young, yeah. Yeah, so there was internet everywhere when I was a kid. But my parents hate technology, and, like, as soon as the router bugged out once, they never hooked it up again. So, like, from 6th grade to, like, 11th, maybe – probably 11th grade, there was no internet in my fucking house. And all I wanted to do was listen to music all the time, and I had no good way to get it. So I had to use like proxies to get around my school's computer security so that I could listen to songs on like Pure Volume or MySpace or whatever it was at the time. And at home, when we finally did get internet back, I would just use LimeWire to like scrape one MP3 at a time off of the fucking site. And yeah, I missed out on a lot of shit that I really wish I would have had time to like stew on. But I found a lot of shit that I liked that may have been like a ton of like white belt grindcore and stuff at the time. Like before I found Hydrahead Records, I loved all that shit. I thought it was so cool. And if I had hung out with smarter kids at the time, they probably would have called me a poser and you know, made me listen to Cannibal Corpse, you know, instead of Daughters or something. And, right. And I'm really glad that didn't happen to me, because I don't know. It was a good journey.
It worked out for you though, because I think if you take in like I think like mass consumption of music, no matter how quality, like a friend of mine used to, in the beginning of the internet, would just download relentlessly everything. And he had it all. You could name any record and he's like, yeah. But he didn't, I don't know that he
you
really
need that
like,
friend.
He didn't hear it all. Like he just had it all. Like, so for me, it was like, I was kind of like pretty late to getting, even when the internet was a thing, I really didn't use it for a really long time. Like, and I was still just like buying music and I mean, this is just some old man shit, but I feel like I absorbed all the stuff I listened to in that period of my life greater than if I could have downloaded everything and heard everything. Because I think then you don't spend enough time with it.
I mean, it's like walking through an art museum, like a really big one. So at least when I walk through an art museum, you know, for the first while, I feel like I'm taking everything in and you know, really struck by some of it. But after like so long of being in there, it just washes over me.
Right.
And that's my feeling nowadays with Spotify and all that stuff. I'm like very avidly into Spotify now. It took me until like a year or two ago max before I was finally like, okay, maybe Spotify has something of value, which is ridiculous. But there's just so much at your fingertips that I feel like you don't sit super long with it. Any of it, because I only had like X amount of records when I was a kid, and I would listen to them over and over and over and over again. You know every little word and every little beat in the record.
Justin,
so I don't know.
Justin, who manages you, fought me to get I was like against Spotify. I was like, I'm not getting it. I don't want it. I listen to records, like, and then I simply tried it. Because, and then, I mean, like, now I love it and use it all the fucking time. But I was definitely, like, a resistant asshole about it. Like, but I mean,
so was I.
Now I can Full ride in my car and listen to your record.
Yeah, exactly. Full of Hell straight up never even acknowledged Spotify in the early days at all. Even when we had shit on there, I was like, what the fuck do I care about this streaming site? Like, it's not really like I care about it. Nobody gets to own the music. They have to pay monthly. No one's using this shit. You know, which is an ignorant, you know, standpoint to have. Even though it's like still semi-valid, like there's tons of artists that are like, fuck Spotify. But when I finally got around to having it, and it was actually because of Justin that I got addicted to Spotify, he let me curate a playlist on Closed Casket's Spotify account, and I just like stayed logged in for like a month and just listened to shit. And what did it for me was when I was listening to more and more hip-hop, I couldn't just download that shit. Actually, like, you remember years ago, I don't know if you remember when like the government passed some media law and then took down like Mega Upload or Mediafire and all that shit.
Yep.
Like whole blogs, all of them just disappearing. Very depressing. But after that point, I found it a lot harder to find and download the records I wanted. So it was really difficult for me to find non-toxic links to download whatever records. And especially with like rap and pop music, I feel like they're more locked down with like piracy. So right, I couldn't get any of that, the shit I was like, you know, trying to get more into. So streaming was the way to go.
What was the first music that actually grabbed your attention, like really grabbed your attention, like more than just I like that song, like something that made you a serious music fan?
I had a pretty good. My parents are really, really into music. It was like always playing in my house. They were huge Grateful Dead fans. Really, really into bluegrass and like, of course, like singer-songwriter stuff like Bob Dylan and who I'm named after and like Tom Waits and all those guys, Leonard Cohen, all the big shit. But they were also into punk before that, like really into, like, I guess like the most basic first wave of punk and the Bad Brains. My mom actually has like photos of that she shot at old Bad Brains concerts in DC and Philly. And those guys are young as fuck, like 20s, early 20s. And she has pictures with some of the Ramones and shit, like her in the pictures. So they gave me my first Ramones CDs and Bad Brains and Dead Kennedys and Sex Pistols and Clash and, you know, all the basic like first punk bands that a kid gets into. And I think punk really hit me hard. Actually, before I got into those bands, the first like sort of punk band I ever liked was Blink 182. And I remember hearing like maybe Aliens Exist or something when I was in elementary school. And I made my mom take me to go get the Mark, Tom, and Travis show. And I didn't understand that it was a live record. And I didn't know how like lewd it was at the time. It was the best fucking thing ever because it was like 45 tracks. And they were just swearing and talking about like, you know, sucking each other's dicks and fucking dogs. And I was just like, this is the funniest shit I've ever heard. And as soon as my parents, you know, heard me singing, there was like one song that was all swear words. And as soon as they heard me singing that, they made me like, they tried to make me purge all my Blink stuff. But in middle school, they gave me all those punk CDs. And I think that was when I was like, I'm a punk. And then every kid at school, there were like five other punk kids. And they were all like simultaneously like, you're a poser. Even though I was like, I don't know. It just kind of came out of nowhere. I just kind of branded a poser. And I just had to like, you know, stick to my guns. Like it was what I liked and what I wanted. So I just stuck to my guns but that was probably it. It was probably like all that basic punk stuff. I fucking loved the Sex Pistols for a couple of years. I thought they were really cool. How wrong I was.
Oh man. I still love the Sex Pistols. It's still good. I mean,
those songs are awesome.
Like
his voice is insane. It's great.
All that stuff is still gold.
I think I ended up feeling like they were all posers when I was like actually learning about the band and how it existed and stuff. And I was just like, that's fucking so lame. Like, fuck those guys.
Yeah.
But you know, the Misfits were big too. When I was in sixth grade, one of my oldest best friends was like already so hard into the Misfits. And I was like, what is this? So, that was a pretty big band for me too, I think at the time.
I completely get where you're coming from with the Sex Pistols, but at the end of the day, like, how it moved you musically is really what
matters. All that matters,
right? The actual art, right. Regardless of how it got there, like it got there.
And what's the difference, really? As an adult, I'm just kind of like, what's the difference, really, in how it was curated, like how the band was formed? Who really cares?
Right.
And like, yeah, they were pieces of shit. Like, moment in time, like all those guys, a lot of those guys were pieces of shit. Like, whatever.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, they definitely had an important impact.
That's one of those that, you know, like I remove the art from the artist, whoever made it. You know, it's like one of those things people get really uppity about, like, what kind of person is making this music, especially nowadays. But the reality is, like, terrible people sometimes make great art. And sometimes great people make horrible art. And the art is what matters. Like, if the person... I mean, and the reality also is, you know, we just don't know everybody. You know, like, the guy who made the album that you think is super right on might be an absolute piece of shit. And you just don't know it. So,
yeah,
take the art for what it's worth. Cast that other shit aside and just enjoy whatever moves you.
Yeah, I had trouble with that. I mean, I remember I don't remember which Ramone it was, but I found out one of them was a Republican, like pretty staunch when I was a kid. And that bummed me out so much. I didn't understand. I was like, how can a guy in a punk band be a Republican?
Right.
Like, it blew my mind. I was like completely crushed for like a week. And I just got over it. Little did I know, like, people like Danzig, total like egomaniac, psychos.
Right.
Like, I had no idea.
Well, and then these people, it changes as they get older too, because you look at like Dave Mustaine from Megadeth. He's like a Christian and a super conservative. You know, it's like,
yeah.
And you know, that's not who he was when he was making those records when he was a young man. He was a fucking drug addled maniac.
I mean, yo, here's a good example. Glenn Benton is still alive. So he didn't stick to any of his goals.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Where's Satan now? Like, he's supposed to be dead, man.
Exactly.
33. Whatever.
Oh, man. And if he had done that, a lot of bad Deicide records would have never happened. And we would just have
and
the great Deicide records.
Imagine the Deicide reputation.
Yeah.
Dude, imagine, like, how fucked up their reputation would be if he did that.
Right.
They would be cemented as, like, the most insidious, deadly, evil death metal band of all time. You know what I mean?
And instead, they just turned into a joke.
Just clickbait. yeah, clickbait news articles about his latest, you know, whatever, his freakouts.
Oh my gosh. Well, so then moving from that, like, what was the, how did you end up wanting to get involved in actually making music? Like, did, was it an instrument or did you want to be a singer? Like, what was the direction from there?
So, like, sixth grade, seventh grade, I just wanted to, like, I wanted to live the life. I just wanted to be a punk, and I wanted, of course I wanted to be in bands. And I thought I wanted to play guitar in bands. And I did at Fit first. Like, I remember the first, I met some, like, slightly older, really, really cool kids. And, you know, they were pretty mean to me, but they, I think they were just kind of being kids. And they still let me come around and let me try to start a band with them. And I was going to play guitar, but this other kid that came along to join was just way better at guitar than me, and nobody wanted to sing. So I ended up singing. And I think my first band was called Rotting Carcass. And it was just like me, a guitar player, and a drummer. And the songs were really, really simplistic. And I just really liked, the screaming was just like really easy for me to do. And I didn't have to buy any gear. And, you know, there's like probably a narcissistic element there, no doubt, where like I really liked being the lead singer of a band or whatever. And there were shows in my little town. At one spot was like a dog kennel. They had shows in the basement of this like big kennel, and a lot of street punk shows. And then the coolest kids in my school had a band that sounded like Cryptopsy and like Black Dahlia Murder, maybe like At the Gatesy almost style shit, but mainly like had like a Cryptopsy Dying Fetus vibe a little. Like, I think that was what shined through the most to me. And these kids were like 1 to 3 years older than me. And when I first saw them play, I like shit my pants. I had no fucking idea that like kids could play music that insane sounding. Like the singer of the band, who's still like my best friend now, and you know, as a grown man, he was just like such a crazy vocalist. I didn't know anything about like dynamic range, like how to do any of it. And he was just like, he sounded to me like Lord Worm. Like, it sounded exactly like he was just, I don't know, he sounded like a vicious animal. And I think that was like, okay, I have to play this style of music. Like, I don't want to play punk anymore. Like, I need to play as extreme as possible. And through those kids, I got into all kinds of like MySpace era, like mid 2000s, like I guess deathcore adjacent shit, like the Red Chord, you know. And some good stuff too, like Discord and Saxis was a band I found really, really early on. And, you know, Daughters and all that shit. Those guys got me into all that stuff. And like Dying Fetus, obviously, and Cannibal Corpse and all that kind of shit. And I think that's like just through my peers is what kind of like, you know, opened my eyes to more extreme music. And from there, it was just like a ramp up to play the most extreme shit I could. I just wanted it to be really fucking fast, really loud. And I wanted to scream, you know, scream my head off or whatever. And that was about it. It was pretty simple.
That's like a funny thing in metal that I think everybody goes through, which is like, because it was no different for me at an earlier age. It was finding metal and it being, you know, like glam metal, like Motley Crue or Rat, into like Iron Maiden, but then finding Metallica and Slayer. And now you're on a path. You're like, because I just want, what's crazier than this? And then when death metal
came in,
where does
it go?
Yeah, all I wanted was like, well, what's the gnarlier record than this? What's the crazier record? And I don't think that that's normal for other musical genres. Like, I don't think like a guy who gets into like pop music is like, what's the poppier than this?
Yeah.
But like for us, it is like a thing that really fucking happens where you're like, what's the craziest shit? I guess it's horror movies as well. Like,
yeah, definitely. And you just get to fucking exploitation films or something. Right. But I used to use an analogy to like, so like all I wanted to do was play in bands. I ended up like quitting all the clubs that I was in, any extracurricular activities. I just didn't give a fuck about anything anymore. And, you know, I ended up going to college for a semester. I drop out. And of course, then at that point, my whole family's like, what is this guy doing? And so, you know, I have to start explaining like what I'm doing and why I'm doing this thing that makes me absolutely no money and living in my mom's house. And, the analogy that ended up making sense for people like my grandparents and stuff, because they were just like, this isn't music, like this is so harsh, I don't like it. I explained it's kind of like eating chili peppers, you know. Especially like regionally all over the world, like you see like in Korea the food is so fucking spicy, like it was actually really hard for me to eat in Korea. It tasted so good, but it was so fucking spicy. They grew up eating that insanely spicy food. And I feel like as your palate gets accustomed to the spiciness, you just want more and more spice, right? And then you get to like psycho harsh noise wall level where you're eating like Carolina Reapers or just like shoving them up your butt or something just to get that spice.
Right.
But that's like the only way I could get my grandparents or anybody to understand like why you'd listen to something that it doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't even know what's going on basically. Like, it just takes time. I feel like you just have to refine your palate and not everybody has a taste for it.
Right. I remember it as a kid. I was going to see my dad never understood the music I was listening to. And I was going to see Pantera and he saw the listing in the paper with the photo of them. And he like showed it to me and he's like, why the fuck would you want to see this? And next to it is a photo of at the same night Reba McEntire is playing somewhere. And he's like, look at her. Why wouldn't you want to see that? And I was just like, we're as dumbfounded looking at each other as we could be. Like, he's like, why wouldn't you go see the hot chick? And I'm like, why don't you want to go see the dudes fucking screaming and playing guitar? Like,
yeah.
I mean, getting through to people outside of this, what you get out of it is almost impossible, I think. But that analogy is definitely a good one. It's the same with my shot with Holy Mountain. My dad never understood what I was doing, and I was losing money, not making money, like just like the whole, you know, like for like a year I lived in a dilapidated house that I didn't pay for, like, and he just was confused by all of it. And then it was only like a couple, maybe 3 years ago total, that he was like, I'm gonna stop giving you advice, I guess you know what you're doing, like, because things had turned around and he had to be like,
that's awesome,
obviously you know what you were trying to do because you did it. And but yeah, up until that point, it was like, yo, you should do this and you should do that, man. And trying to give me, and I'm like, you don't know what I'm trying to do though.
squatting in the house. Right. Yo, our first couple of years of Full of Hell, actually way more than the first couple of years, if I'm being real, because we just like, over the years we've learned that if we live like rats, like, and keep costs really low, it's worth all the struggle. But those first few years, I just remember, you know, not having anything to show for it. Outside of my bubble, I could be like, oh, I got to go to Sweden, like, you know, whatever. But I had to try and explain it to them in terms where I wasn't embarrassed. And they'd be like, so are people coming to your shows? Like, how many people? And I remember being like, yeah, like, you know, a few hundred people a night. And that was like so insanely far from the truth. I wouldn't have even known what the fuck to do if 300 people had ever come to see Full of Hell at the time. And that's like a that's a nice show now in 2020, not in 2011, where it was like five people are coming to see you. Why are you doing this? I couldn't let them know. I just like, you know, it was brutal.
I went through the same thing.
It was worth all the struggle.
Yeah. It was the exact like telling them, being excited that I was working with a band. And then first thing they ask is about money. And I'm like, you know, literally borderline lying, because you don't want to admit to your parents you're not making any fucking money. It's just so cool that this band's letting me work with them. Like,
you're like, you don't understand. This band's like really fucking sick. And I would just do that with my mom too. I'd be like, you don't understand. This festival is like really cool. It's like a pass for us. Like, it's a good sign. Like, first time playing MDF. My mom and dad were honestly always super supportive. My mom was just like, you know, you need to work as much as you can, because I'm not fucking giving you money like to like keep you alive through this. Like, that was the only thing. And I think that's like the best thing she could have told me. But, you know, they were supportive overall. Like, everybody in my family was. It was just hard to explain to them in terms that made sense. Like, any kind of metric that, you know, was practical in their minds.
Right. And I mean, ultimately, they just want what's best for you. And they don't understand.
Absolutely. And that's what made it harder.
I mean, my parents are amazing.
No, I'm not starving.
Right.
Yeah, I love my parents.
Mine were awesome and supportive. They just were confused as fuck by my terrible decisions.
Yeah.
But so,
whatever.
If I'm not mistaken, I know Spencer does, but don't both of you have like somewhat of a background in hardcore?
Yeah. I mean, I was always kind of into like to grind and noise, and so was he. I played in a hardcore band when I was in college briefly. But that was like my only, and I've always gone to hardcore shows.
Right.
And a lot of our friends are into hardcore. But yeah, Spencer had a straight edge band. I had a band called Sun Eater for a little while that was like a hardcore band. I just wanted a band that kind of sounded like Mind Eraser. That's like my favorite hardcore band of all time. But like, you know, I'd say our involvement was more like when Full of Hell started. Full of Hell was very much like rooted in hardcore. And I still feel like, you know, in certain ways it totally still is. We played with tons of hardcore bands. We still tour with hardcore bands every now and then. And the ethics are still there, you know? It's like a vibe of, like, this is everybody's stage. We're no better than anybody else. Like, this is the people's medium. Like, you know, I don't know. You know what I mean?
No, like, exactly.
Socially, I feel like we still carry ourselves like a hardcore band should be carrying themselves. It's like Neurosis. They still consider themselves a hardcore band. And I really identify with them morally, you know, ethically. I think they're really inspiring, and like, we kind of carry that too. And our email is still Full of Hell HC, so we will never, ever, ever depart from it. that will at least be left in the end.
Right. And I mean, that's why I asked, because I knew Spencer did, and I was pretty sure you were too.
Absolutely.
I see that like in you guys, like, because I know that's where I got my like work ethic from. Like, my like drive to do shit didn't come from because I truthfully was into metal long before hard. I didn't get into hardcore until I was much older, but the hardcore scene is where I got like everything I have as far as what I'm doing comes from the hardcore scene. It comes from meeting the dudes that did the thing and the work ethic I got there.
Absolutely. I think outside of Bad Brains, I wasn't really into hardcore until I was like 17, and then that's when I had been straight edge for years, but I didn't really understand or know about the movement at all, or had ever heard that term. And when I found straight edge, I was just like, this is me. Like, this is incredible. Like, this is a cool culture that's into the same, you know, things I'm into. And that was like my start with hardcore, at least. And I can't say I'm like a super fan or that I know like everything that's going on, but we're still very much like, you know, sort of like involved in different ways with hardcore, and like we still listen to hardcore records, and our buddies still playing lots of hardcore bands, you know, so we're always bumping shoulders, and I don't think we've ever really left that scene.
Yeah,
like, tons of hardcore kids come out still
for sure. It's easily identifiable that you guys have that background, because it's like,
I'm glad.
Yeah, I think puts you in a position other bands that is playing a similar style that you don't have, because that background is definitely like a fucking, you know, training ground for being a workhorse. Like, for, you know, it's just a different vibe.
DIY 101. And that's something crazy. When we started touring with metal bands, and I'm not trying to talk shit, because there's a ton of metal bands, like Immolation, for example, that are like the most inspiring DIY as fuck, like go-getter dudes ever. Like, really inspiring. But like, in some places you look in the metal scene, or even like maybe like the deathcore scene and stuff, those guys are like, it's interesting to see sometimes like a difference in priorities, I guess. And I'm not saying you can't find hardcore bands that aren't money hungry or like in it for the image, because they clearly are sometimes. But like with metal, like, I think like a positive is that like it's very much about the art and the craft and the culture, which is really fucking cool. But sometimes we also encountered like ego and like, I want to be paid a lot. I don't care if the promoter loses money, like that kind of crazy shit. And for Full of Hell, there's never been a time where we were like, I don't give a fuck if the promoter loses money. Like, it's like an exchange of like ideas. And like, it's supposed to be a service where like everybody makes out in the end. It's not like, I don't know. You can't just go around ripping people off. And it's not just about a dollar here or there, like just to fuck somebody over. And I definitely saw that more outside of hardcore than I saw in hardcore. You know what I mean?
Right.
And obviously there's exceptions, but like, that's something, a positive that we got out of like punk and hardcore scenes that we wouldn't have gotten out of like maybe some other scenes. You know what I mean?
Right. I'm definitely disconnected at this point from the hardcore scene. Pretty hardcore, but, I'm, I'm super thankful for all that stuff. Like the people I met during that, you know, and I met my fair share of cocksuckers too, but the people that did impact me in that world and did like instill this stuff in me. I mean, like, I literally wouldn't be doing what I am without it. Like, and I see bands like you guys, like you, which is what I, you know, like, you know, my no manager policy it's for that very reason. I want to work with bands that are, you know, like working hard, like that are, that I can talk to directly and we can just get shit going and do it. Like, I mean, you guys have,
yeah, because let's be honest, 95% of management is just like diluting the relationships that these bands already had and then just fucking it up. Like, yeah, I don't know.
It's a parasitic relationship.
It's really hard to see when that shit happens.
It's like a, yeah, something attaches sure. to something that's already doing well and then sucks the life out of it.
Well, we never considered having management, and it was only through the good graces of our friend Justin that we ever even considered it. You know what I mean? And he wasn't even a manager until a couple of years ago. He's for it. And like, we always wanted to do everything ourselves. And bands like Drop Dead are like, and Converge are like big, big inspirations for us as far as like meeting them and talking to them about shit. Like Ben, who runs Armageddon Shop, he's like fucking DIY 101. That dude's like a fucking hero, like to me for sure. And they made us want to put out our own records and all that shit. And it's important to be involved with your craft on every detail, I think.
Absolutely. So you guys, speaking of records, like how did Full of Hell form? Like, how did you already know Spencer, or how did you guys all come together?
So I knew Spencer vaguely. I never met him, but I knew of him through his Straight Edge band, and he broke that band up for whatever reason and formed Full of Hell so that he could finally do the band he always wanted to do, because he was always that, like, he's always into hardcore, but he was always that weirdo in the promos that had like a Disrupt shirt on or something, or like a Merzbow shirt. And he never got to do a band like that because, you know, where he lived, and frankly where I lived, there was just nobody in those towns that wanted to play grindcore, wanted to play D-beat, or wanted to play, you know, any of the number of things that we wanted Full of Hell to be at the time. So he forms Full of Hell with a bunch of dudes down there that don't like that kind of stuff. So the compromise was to kind of cut a demo that was, I haven't listened to it in a long time because I don't really fuck with it, but like there's a Full of Hell demo without me, and the songs are more sludgy. I think like there's some D-beat and then there's some kind of crowbar-y parts, and that was kind of like the ground they had struck. I met them playing shows. I played a couple shows with Full of Hell with my other band, and I met Spencer, and I was just kind of like really impressed with how well he was able to book DIY tours and stuff, so I wanted to pick his brain anyway. And I knew that he was probably into some cool stuff. And I'd actually literally never met a kid in my life that liked all of the same shit I liked in that spectrum. Like all the grindcore, like all like the screamo stuff, like Page 99 and like Orchid and all that stuff, and was into noise and like loved Hydrahead Records. I was like, this motherfucker is so cool and so driven. Like, how lucky for these other guys to be in a band with this guy. And right after those shows, the singer quit, and I was just like, fuck that, I'm joining your band, and we're going to make it the band you want it to be. So when I joined, I think Spencer finally had like another voice that was like completely aligned with his vision. And over time, you know, that forced the other guys out of the band. And he had found Dave already and used Dave for some, like, I don't know, I guess Dave had already gone on a tour with them, but because he was like a sophomore in high school, he really couldn't do much, so we had to have fill-in drummers when I first joined the band. But by Dave's senior year, we figured out a way to get him out of school to go to Europe for 3 weeks without getting expelled. I had to like write a fake contract for him and everything, and his parents fought to let him go, and his family's wonderful, but honestly, dude, I don't know what fucking parents would let their kid go to Europe for 3 weeks for some mystery DIY tour. And we got really fucking sick and in big trouble on that tour. The van that we were using was like, I don't mean to go on a tangent because I could literally talk for hours about stupid ass stories about us getting fucked. But needless to say, that's how the band formed. We've gone through like a billion bass players, but like the last two bass players had like a huge impact on the band, Sam and this dude, Brandon. But yeah, I mean, this is Spencer's brainchild. He like always is the mastermind behind the direction of that Full of Hell's going to take. He's the one that gave me my first noise rig. Cause we both were like, let's put noise in Full of Hell. I didn't know where to begin. You know, he had a better idea than I did. And, I don't know, man, he's always been the one to like be our tastemaker. Like he gets us into new shit. He guides the direction of the band, and And I think he needed another person like me to join the band that was also really driven, because I feel really strongly about how the lyrics are presented and how the aesthetic of the band is presented. So, I was learning the whole time I was in Full of Hell because it was my first serious band. So you see maybe some inconsistencies in the aesthetic and the presentation, but because it's our grower band, at this point I feel like the aesthetic's much more dialed in, and that's something that me and Spencer care a lot about. But that's kind of like, I guess, the basics of how the band is and how it was or whatever.
It's amazing to find the people that you gel with that make, because I can remember, and again, like equating your band to this shop, we had people here that just like weren't into it like I was, didn't, I would say, oh, we're getting to, you know, oh shit, we just got dragged into Sunlight, we're going to be doing their store, and they'd shrug at me like, who cares? And it's like, it fucking ruins like your excitement and your energy to do something. And
so yeah,
it's awesome that you guys were able to find, you know, like form a group of dudes like-minded that really wanted to fucking go after the same shit.
Yeah, man.
Because without that, like, it's no miserable.
No disrespect to anybody that's been in the band. Like, you can't expect someone to be willing to die on a cross for a band. And me and Spencer from day one were just like, we have to do this. Like, this is all I want in life. In fact, it wasn't until I like met my wife that I was even like, I give a fuck about anything more than this band. You know what I mean? Like, I was really right. Like Full of Hell. This is it. This is it. This is, and it's still like Full of Hell. This is it. You know, I just happen to also like love my wife more than my band and my family or whatever. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like ready to die for this thing. And I still pretty much am. And I can't blame people. I had falling outs with some of the members of Full of Hell that aren't in the band anymore, but like, I can't blame any of them, because this shit like chews you up. And like, if you're not really, really, really passionate, and then it's not for you, and that's cool. You just got to go find whatever it is that is. But we're lucky because like Spencer and Dave are like the core. And I think if any of the three of us specifically left the band, I think it would fucking destroy the band permanently. Because me and Spencer, if one of us quit, I wouldn't do the band without Spencer. I don't think he would do it without me. And I don't know what the fuck we'd do without Dave. Dave is like, I don't know, man. He just like, it's weird. We're like this mutant family. It's a very codependent relationship. Everybody has a role, and the roles are extremely crucial. And Sam is like the coolest bass player we've ever had. He's a great dude. It's everybody in the band now belongs firmly and is needed for sure.
You guys have definitely gelled into something special. It's because I saw you, I don't know how early, but I saw you fairly early, at least for me.
Where was that?
With you played with Youngin' in
Integrity?
The Way. No, it would have been you guys with Youngin' in the Way. And
where was that at?
God, I don't even. It was in North Carolina. It was in.
Was it in a basement?
No, it was in some shitty club. It's so long ago now, I can't remember where the fuck it was.
Oh man, you called it so shitty. I don't want to drag it.
Yeah, yeah. Now you're gonna come up with a name. You're gonna be like, oh yeah, it was.
It was a milestone, right? It had to have been. In Charlotte?
No, because that is shitty in a charming way. Like, this is...
I love that place.
This was just some dump. Like, that place is something else. Like, this was just like some generic piece of shit.
We've played some freaky-ass shows. We've played some weird spaces in the Carolinas. Like, one of the Youngin' in the Way shows was like, it's crazy that this happened now, but like, Weekend Nachos, Dead in the Dirt, Full of Hell, Youngin' in the Way, and maybe like Discourse or something? I don't remember. But there weren't that many people there. There were like 30 people there, maybe. It was pretty bad. But at the time, it was really good, right? It was in like a bike shop. My friend Kyle booked it. And it got shut down, and Weekend Nachos played in the living room. But yeah, man, we played a lot of gigs down there with them. That is a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember seeing you guys. And honestly, like what I saw that night has no semblance of what you guys are now. You know what I mean? It's interesting to, especially now that I got to work with you guys in the later part and watch you guys evolve and change. It's definitely really fucking cool. And you made the Neurosis reference earlier, and I've said that, and I've said it to you, but again, it's nice to say publicly, like, I think you guys are your generation's Neurosis. Like, you guys
Man.
are, I see you the same way. Like, you guys, because it's, you're charting your own fucking course. You have that same, like, kind of hardcore background. You also have that same humble beginning with the, you know, early Neurosis is nothing like what Neurosis morphed into. Dude, I'm seeing the same thing.
Some of those stories, there's stories about Neurosis. I don't have nearly enough, but, like, some of them, hearing them then was an inspiration for how we carry ourselves now. Like, I remember hearing about them doing Ozfest, and the problem, I guess, with Ozfest at the time was that all the bands would ride in buses, and the cost is obviously super high with a bus, but maybe your fee is only barely enough to cover the bus. And Neurosis, they're go-getters, they're DIY dudes, so I heard that they refused to do a bus and went in a van on this festival circuit run. Festival runs sound so brutal. Just for, like, reference, if anybody doesn't know, like, this detail, as far as, like, doing something like Warped Tour or, like, whatever, Ozfest touring around the country, I think it's, like, you have to be there at, like, 8 in the fucking morning. Every show is, like, 9 hours away, and you're there until the end of the night. But Neurosis would roll around in their van, and, like, you'd see them, like, sleeping in the field in the morning, like, just keeping it in the van to, like, you know, do what they had to do to make it work. And that shit, to me, is just, like, super goat, like, inspiring. You know what I mean? The Bellwitch guys have this saying, I think they got it from Yob, and it's, what would Neurosis do? And I just think that, like, kind of sums it up, you know?
Absolutely. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, I remember reading that Ozfest was, at the end of that, was the moment where those dudes were like, we're not doing anything we don't want to do anymore. Like, the end of, like, trying to tour as, like, a touring entity instead of just, like, we're going to play shows when we want, and when we don't, we're going to go do something else. Which I also think is the inspiring part of that band, that they don't operate under
there are no rules.
Yeah, they'll do whatever they want, and they'll put out records when they want, and they'll play shows when they want.
Well, yeah, man. Yo, that album cycle shit that bands do is so irritating. Like, it's so crippling. Like, don't limit yourself to only releasing a record. You got to release it between, like, March and, I don't know, September or whatever the fuck they say, and then, like, I don't know, just the whole machine of it, and we're part of that. But, like, I just think it's lame. I like how, like, bands like The Body just do whatever they want. You know what I mean? They just put out a collab a month after their LP. Unspeakable nowadays, and they don't care, and it doesn't matter. They do it their own way, and it's because it's your project. Like, Holy Mountain doesn't have to follow the rules like every other merch company does things. You can figure out what works best for you, and in that way, like, you can make it into a lifestyle because it's shaped around, you know, what you can do. No wonder it breaks bands, because they have to follow some guidelines from someone like fucking Sony. Like, they know what it means to be a DIY band.
Well, and those rules are usually
for everybody.
All those rules are usually, this goes back to our discussion earlier about managers, but those rules are usually horseshit made up by people pretending to know better than you, but they don't know shit.
Yeah.
Now we've created a language where I can pretend to know more than you.
Yeah. Like, it does a lot of good for them, but does it do good for you? And do you really need these people? Like, can you just cut them out of the equation? Like, and I'm speaking from a point of privilege, because I'm really fortunate that Full of Hell has enough people that like us that we can afford to look at doing everything ourselves and, like, you know, keep it really DIY. But, like, you know, for a struggling band, maybe to be offered a check to produce a record, like, you know, having a studio bill footed or whatever, they wouldn't be able to make that record otherwise. And that's totally cool. We've done, like, we still do records like that. But I think the ultimate goal should be to just, like, box those people out. Because, like, and no offense to any of the labels we work with, I love everybody we work with, but, like, it's about the artist. And I think in the next 20 to 30 years, maybe less, I don't really know, that's just a bullshit time frame, the idea of the middleman is going to be just eliminated. Because look at everything that's at your fingertips now.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing. That's what I always tell whenever any band that I'm talking to starts to mention a manager. A, I tell them that their manager can never talk to me, as you know. And then B, I've actually, like, recently had to write a few emails where bands copied their new manager in and wrote me. And I wrote back with their manager on a copy that stating, your manager's never allowed to talk to me. You're free That's to so share sick. Any information I give you with your management, but your management can never speak to me directly in any way.
I feel bad because bands, I understand like the thirst of wanting it to work, and maybe like this is the answer, but I feel like 9 out of 10 times, maybe like 9.9 out of 10 times, it's the wrong answer, because I don't know. It's just,
well, then you get a rare, you get a rare case, like you're like Justin is your manager, but he's not, he doesn't handle himself like any number of managers I could name right now that are literally there just to leech and offer nothing. Like, you know,
that was an interesting thing with him is like Full of Hell, when we hired someone, it was definitely made clear, like, yo, we like doing all of this stuff. We need you for like big picture stuff. He's like what Michael Scott was supposed to do when there were two managers in the office. He's like big, strictly big picture. Right. And me and Spencer are Jim.
Gotcha.
And that works out really well for us because, you know, nothing's going to get fucked up. I don't feel like we hired a guy to order merch for us.
Right.
I know how to fucking order merch. I know what I want our merch to look like. Blah, blah. Like, I don't know.
Right.
We don't need a guy to, like, change our diapers. And I think that's the mistake maybe with the whole manager idea. They're not supposed to change your diapers. I mean, maybe some of these older bands where the guys are, like, raging drug addicts and, like, are really genius musicians that should stay on the road. Maybe they need someone to be like a handler, and that's cool. But like a young band, go out there and cut your own teeth and do it yourself.
I definitely believe there's a point where you would need a manager. I don't currently work for any band that's big enough that really needs like a day-to-day management.
Like, yo, taxes and LLC shit. When you actually like, that's a scary world. When you like, when I got to a point where I was just like, oh, fuck, like, I'm going to get really boned on my taxes this year because the Square registers under my name. And it basically looks like I have like a plumber's salary in my fucking, to my name. This is going to screw me. Like, what do I do? We didn't even know what to do. We were at a point where me and Spencer were really getting burned out because we were handling every little thing. And we couldn't just like, there was just no other solution other than to give up or to hire someone to give this money to someone to like do these things that we A, don't understand how to do, and B, cannot do without burning ourselves out. And you're right. And we're still very involved in everything, but it's so much better now.
Well, I figure we're probably coming up on an hour here, and I got two more things. One was an urban legend I wanted to ask. I don't know if this is true or not. I just heard
and
wondered if this was true. Is it true that before you worked with A389 that he had told you you guys weren't actually ready, or, you know, like, I don't want to say good enough, but that you weren't like up to par, and to like basically said, you know, keep going and come back?
Whoa, where'd you hear that?
I actually don't fucking remember. The thoughts in my head, and
I want a name.
I feel like, I mean,
now no, just kidding.
If I had to guess, I mean, it feels like, you know, a conversation maybe Justin and I would have had, since he knows both parties, but I don't want to put him on the fucking the dangle for that.
We emailed Justin when we recorded our first 7-inch. Closed Casket was one of the labels we sent out to, and I think he wrote back and was really nice, and he basically said, like, I just can't do it right now, but, you know, this is cool. The guy that actually ended up putting out our 7-inch was this dude Dave Heck, who's like a total legend from the Philly suburbs, Lansdale. And he was good friends with Dom, A389 as well. And I don't think we sent that 7-inch to Dom. We might have, and he may have said something like that, because after we put out the 7-inch with Dave Heck, I hit him up again, and I was like, or maybe it was the first time. And I was just like, this was the first time I spoke to him though. And I was like, hey, do you want to do a 7-inch with us? You know, we love your label. And he just emailed me back and was like, no, you're going to do an LP because you're ready to do an LP now. And that's all that I remember from my first conversation with Dom.
That's awesome.
Spencer might have been, because we were both submitting that, like, what we thought was a press kit at the time to try and get a 7-inch out for this U.S. tour we were doing. And he might have sent it to Dom, because we kind of sent it to everybody that we knew that did DIY music, even like Christian hardcore labels that we'd met in Florida that were really, really cool people, but probably didn't want to do a Full of Hell record.
Right.
Not that we ever said we were anti-Christian, but at the, you know, the name itself kind of lends like, you know, certain ideas. But no, I don't remember if that specifically happened, but Dom is pretty well known, for sending, pretty interesting responses to demos.
I would have believed it 100%. Like, I mean, if you had been like, yes, absolutely, I'd have been like, of course, it makes sense.
Yeah, he's a smart ass. Like, that's like his MO. He loves to talk shit. He loves pranking. He used to send a lot of funny emails to bands, just like making fun of their name or like telling them they sounded like Ruiner, which to him was like a diss because he just loves bullying this dude Mitch, who was in Pulling Teeth. Like, they have tattoos making fun of him because he like messed up a little part of a Pulling Teeth solo once, and then all the members of Pulling Teeth got a caricature of him tattooed on them, and with the date that he messed up the solo. So
holy shit, they that's just too
were,
much.
They were so relentless. Yeah, there's definitely like people that I'm friends with out there that are not friends with Dom anymore because they couldn't handle him goofing on them so hard. And I would say, to expand on the A389 thing, Dom is like hugely instrumental in making Full of Hell anything that Full of Hell is now. He just like believed in us and pushed us all the way, gave me so many brilliant ideas, like really built this thing with me. And like, he also imparted on us, we kind of had it already, but it was so encouraged because we thought Pulling Teeth was the best and we loved his label and loved him. He was such a smartass and loved pranking people, and we just were like, we ran with it. So we would just, every time we met a new band, Dave would just talk shit to them and just try to make them mad and like do weird stuff. Like Dom, one of my favorite Dom things, I guess, like they went on tour with Converge, and they were just trying to mess with Converge the whole time. And he told me that he used to just walk up to Jake and just try to hold his hand all the time. And Jake would always just be like, what are you doing? Just like little shit like that, like makes me laugh. And like the first time Dave met Pulling Teeth, he knew that that was their shit. So he went up to Alex, the drummer, and was just like, I forget what he fucking said. He was like, yo, man, that was a really good set. Was there something wrong with the drums, though? It just sounded a little off. I mean, I know it's like not normal. Like, he would just like make him feel bad. And he would just be like, oh, yeah, man, oh, I think I messed up. And he'd just be like, it's okay, man, maybe next time. Like, his first instinct would just be to gut check any band we met, especially friends and especially bands with egos. It doesn't happen as often nowadays, but A389, they were great.
I love that label. Dom recently, and that was when Integrity came through. That was actually the first time I met him in real life, and seemed like a super nice dude. Definitely a label that I like loved and bought lots of records from. And
yeah, that was like, I feel like that era, there's no labels like that size right now. Like, I know that there are, but like, I feel like it was just such a diverse amount of record labels then doing DIY stuff. And I feel like the field has narrowed. And I could just be speaking from a tone deaf perspective because I'm not working with any of those labels now. But do you feel like that? Like, and maybe mid-size is like overstating it, but like the smaller DIY labels that really are making it happen for bands, they're really important. And I just don't see as many nowadays.
Yeah, I think too, like his label and Hydra had shared that such a diverse roster, like just like, and it was taste clearly making. Art first. It was like the obvious.
I mean, that's like profound lore.
Yeah. And I mean, I would also throw
one man labels, tastemakers.
Justin, you know, Close Casket is definitely the A389 of now.
Dude, 100%, 100%. And his roster has just gotten so diverse, doing stuff for like bands like Intensive Care and Pet Brick. I never would have guessed that he would be doing an Intensive Care record until, you know, we started working with him. And I was like, dude, because I admired Closed Casket even just from the hardcore releases, because it's like the best of the best. You know, a band like Incendiary, they're like one of the best hardcore bands on the planet. Undeniably great. And he has just like several bands like that are just unbelievable. And now he's just putting out all kinds of, it's really exciting. I'm excited for him. Like, it's just cool. A band like Vane is doing, you know, interesting stuff too. It's just neat. His label is pure. It's definitely just about what he likes.
I mean, he's the same thing we were talking about at the beginning, doing whatever the fuck he wants. Like, and you know, like when, I think when your motivation comes from a perspective like that, like for you guys and for me and for him, when you're literally doing what the fuck you want to do, like people sense that fucking passion and I think take a better look and an extra second at what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I get older, I'm sorry I'm going on a tangent. I'm just kind of talkative today. But I remember being like 23, 24. I'm 30 now. And just wanting Full of Hell to succeed so fucking bad. I want the big tours. I want everybody to like my band. I want to sell records. I want to do it all. And wanting it so desperately and having no connections, like no easy, like, here you go kind of shit ever happening. It was really disheartening at the time. And we couldn't even really find an agent that was trustworthy. We just had all these, even, you know, when we started like thinking we needed one to like gun for us for certain stuff. And the people that we ended up working with over the years are people that they're few and far in between, but they like came to us genuinely interested in our vision and what we were doing. And now at 30, the people that I work with that through music are like my A team. I'm so fucking glad that everything was a slow burn for Full of Hell and that it took ages to make the connections that we needed to make this thing happen because it took so long, we met the right people. I don't know. And you're working specifically with people that, you know, are passionate about what they're doing. People like in Holy Mountain, like Evil Greed is a good example over in Europe. They're like pretty strictly to music, but like they like, I don't know, they live for it. They're extremely passionate and they're doing amazing stuff too. It's just, it's cool to work with just people that you really believe in and that, you know, it's mutual.
I think that goes back to that whole, I mean, the discussion about management too. It's why I'm not interested in that. I don't want to work with your manager. I want to work with you, the guy making the, or whoever making the thing that I think is so special. Like that's, I want to work with you on that. I don't want to work with your bean counter on that. I want to work with you on that.
It also would sketch me out to be managed by someone that manages like someone like a big manager that manages like 30 bands or something. Like how, I don't know.
Oh, for sure someone's not being paid attention to.
Yeah, like nobody's being paid attention to because like, I mean, being in a band is a narcissistic thing. Like it is me at a certain point. It's like, hey, as far as my perspective goes, this is my shit. Like it gets all of my time. So how am I ever going to find someone that I'm willing to give like a share to, like to pretend that they're on the same wavelength as me? They're not. They're never going to be.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely not. And it's as tough. They grow and take on more clients, you know, they're not.
Bye bye.
They're not paying attention like they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nobody will look out for you
it's
like
hard
you.
To find a balance. Exactly. And that's why like, you got to go it alone. If not forever,
you just have to like, right. Yeah. I think you have to take charge of your own shit and you have to align yourself with people that have your best interest at heart. And
yeah. And we got lucky, honestly, like if we didn't have, we have a very particular relationship with our management and like, it's a really good thing. And I don't know any manager. I don't even know managers. Like I only know like a couple people that even do that just cause I'm not like a music industry guy or whatever. But, like, I don't know anybody that is even on the wavelength that we are on except for, you know, the guy we work with.
Right.
It's only that he exists that we have a manager. You know what I mean? It never would have happened otherwise.
When I try and talk to people about what music managers in this scene are like, and I always equate it to, it's like you just said you're something, so you're something. I was like, so when some guy says, well, I'm a manager, it's no different than if I just said, well, I'm a raccoon. Like, I can say I'm a raccoon. But I don't have any qualifications to be a raccoon. I can say it all day long. And we'll make it true. Just like all the managers I've ever met. You know, it's like, well, what are your qualifications? What's your background? Explain to me why you're qualified. And all of them are literally just like, well, I hung around the scene and I booked some shows and I was on a tour once or something. Now you're a fucking manager. Like, I don't see it. Like, I don't see the connection. I don't understand, like,
how it's brutal.
You know,
I think there's an interesting thing with like anybody really trying to scrape a profit out of a really niche genre. And I know a lot of booking agents now that are really sweet, awesome people that really do have good intentions. But like for me, there was always like a conflict of interest because Spencer and I have thought like maybe we should book bands, you know, because we really like booking tours and we're good at booking tours for Full of Hell. But I've never done it because I just feel like I don't believe in any band like I believe in Full of Hell. Like, I don't know. And all my connections are friends. Like, I don't want to abuse these connections for profit. You know what I mean? Or take this money from a band when I really, what is best for the band is probably if they just book themselves and build their own thing. I just could never get myself on the page where I could like see myself working on the other end of the spectrum in this scene. You know what I mean? I feel like it's so insulated and it's so small that, I don't know. It's just, it feels like a conflict of interest for me. It feels impure. And I'm not trying to rag on anybody, anything anybody's doing. I know like plenty of guys doing like a good thing, but it's just for me personally, it always felt kind of wrong. I don't know.
No, I agree.
It's weird though. When DIY intersects business, it's like what's right and what's wrong.
Right.
It's really uncomfortable sometimes.
Well, and then on the other end of my, you know, like my feelings and your feelings on this is what's right for you. And I mean, if that's right for somebody else, more power to them. I'm definitely not here
exactly.
to tell people how to do
journey.
It. Like, I just know like
no
specifically
way.
For me, what I'm looking for. And if what you're looking for is management and these other things, and you don't want to take care of your own shit, then we're probably not on the same page. We're probably not interested in similar goals. And
that's probably the key difference.
So that's really
if you're just
like,
not, if
I
you're
should probably be less of a
stuff.
Cock in the way that I respond to, but you know, like I should probably just be like, oh, well, we have different agendas here. Like instead of immediately
yeah,
being like, fuck your manager.
I don't know. very passionate about it. And that's cool. If you're looking to not do stuff, then it's probably I don't know. That right there is like a critical difference. Like if you're just trying to like shirk off normal band duties, like that's part of the journey, you know, taking pride in how you do all that stuff.
I agree.
Like I actually like ordering merch and I let Justin do it from time to time, but like me and Spencer still pick out like every piece of merch we make very carefully and like, you know, try to hire artists that like, you know, don't have a name, maybe like people from all over the world. Like some of our coolest designs have come from this dude in Slovenia made us a show poster for us for a canceled show that was supposed to be like a week ago. And the poster is like unbelievable. It's like one of the coolest collages I've seen in a while, super harsh. And I was like, yo, this has to be the tour poster and the shirt. And, I just want to plug other artists like that are unknown and make it reciprocal. It should all be, I guess that's my point. You should want to do that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you should be looking out for your own stuff. I know management that hires the artists to work on the band's art. Like in the early stages of this, when I still allowed these kind of people into the, before I like kind of ushered everyone out and showed them the door, I literally had management that picked their band shirt designs. And I think that's fucking crazy. Like hiring the artist, well, picking the shirt designs, like your band should be in charge of that.
Do you offer a graphic design service in Holy Mountain for bands that are like, we want to have a merch store, but we don't know what we want?
I actually don't. Because like,
some of my friends' businesses do, and it blows my mind. And they're really good at it. Like Cold Cuts, for instance, they have like an in-house design team that's like really, really good at designing merch. We don't generally get anything from their team just because it's the fun. That's the fun for me is to get the designs
right.
myself. But they have a bunch of clients all the time, apparently, that are just like, I don't know what I want, and they don't really care.
To me, that's crazy.
Like, all right, well, and then their designers are just like, well, what kind of band is this? And then they make like a lookbook for them to look through designs, and then they just pick it out. That's it. No, like that's alien to you and me because
right.
that's like half of the aesthetic. Right.
I
there.
Do love
how you present your.
Like on the other end of that, though, I do love. Working with a band that needs new merch and then showing them artists that I'm working with and trying to turn them on to.
I mean,
like
that's totally different.
Which
yeah.
is that I do love. Like, that's not designing your
yeah.
merch for you. That's being like, you know, we have similar taste. I know what you're going for. And have you seen this dude? His shit's amazing. You should maybe.
Oh, that's totally different. Yeah, yeah.
But like, if a band came
to
me and didn't know what
everything.
They wanted, I would be like, well, go find out who you are. Like, we'll work
yeah,
it out
like,
after you discover
you
who
advice.
You are.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess this whole discussion can be boiled down to like what we feel a band should be isn't what other people feel a band should be. And we have our opinion probably has just as much weight as like the guy on the other side of the fence. It's whatever. Like it's all subjective. And like this is just how we feel things should be done. And I'm proud, very proud of that, obviously, because I like talking about it too much. But like I really feel like things should be hands on. I don't know. I just can't imagine not wanting to control all the details.
Right.
But,
well, there's a joy in all
that's
that
how it
stuff.
Is for some people.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, though. And like as long as someone's speaking their truth, you know, like making the art that they want to make and getting something out of it, who am I to say how they should run their band? So like at the end of the day, like I have my opinions, like fuck my opinions, like whatever. Like I am how I am, you are how you are, and those bands can do their thing, you know. It's thankfully it's a really diverse world. We don't have to work with people that we don't fuck with like that.
No one will check my opinionated horse shit like my wife when I get home and say things like that. Like when I are discussing, she'll be the first to be like, "Well, here's the other side of it, and this is why you're just a dickhead." Like, and then I go, "Oh yeah, 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 you're right. I am kind of a dickhead."
She's definitely the voice of reason. She's like, "Yeah, cool it on the hater aid." Right. She's definitely been instrumental in like calming me down a bit.
That is good balance for dudes like you and me to have that other perspective. Because she's literally like changed my mind. Where I come home and I'm all hot on whatever horse shit that I'm on, and she's throws the other perspective that I didn't even think about, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's
yeah. And I think it's really important to always we got to stay like on top of being open to other perspectives forever, because I think like, no matter what the situation is, there's always going to be a reason why this person is the way they are or where they're from or whatever, you know, brought them to this point. And like, I don't know, there's always going to be people that have differing opinions. So I just try not to let it bother me. Just kind of like, I can clown it with my friends. It's fun. And then that's it. You know what I mean? Right. I'm not trying to be like aggro about it. It doesn't fucking matter. If it's not affecting my shit, like whatever. If it's a band I have to go on tour with, maybe I'll cry a little more. Right. But we don't really
if its effects been, like, really actually bleed into your that. Life.
Yeah, exactly. We've been pretty fortunate there. I can't even think of a band offhand that we toured with that I didn't end up like being like, yeah, these guys are good guys, you know.
Right.
So we're lucky. I'm sure we'll tour some assholes someday.
All right. Well,
but you know, I'm ready for it.
Let's do the last, cause since the second to last question there veered real long and real far away from Don.
Oh, yeah. Whoops, from its origin, sorry.
But that's totally fine. So the last one is, I love finding out about new music from other people. That's like, you know, and I have conversations with people or just seeing somebody post a record somewhere. So what would you say is, if you were going to tell somebody like, this is for me the most important record there is, like there's, you know, kind of the Desert Island album, what is the album that you hold in the most high esteem, the most dear?
That's like an impossible question for me.
I know it is, and I really know it shifts know. For, I mean, for me it shifts daily, but so I'm asking you now, okay. So it's now.
This is a Desert Island record. I haven't listened to it in a little while, but like, this is definitely in my top five all time. Joanna Newsom, East. She's a harpist. This is a record, like, basically I fell in love with my wife listening to. Like, it's so sprawling and beautiful and, like, haunting. It's, like, fully orchestrated. Like, her music before this didn't usually have, like, full orchestration. And this one is, like, an entire orchestra behind her while she's ripping on this harp, you know. The songs are really epic and long, and they tell like the most incredibly beautiful, like layered, you know, sad, incredible stories, like paint these crazy pictures. As a lyricist, she's really inspiring. It's just like, I don't know. It has its own vibe, and I love her voice. And that is definitely, you know, if there was like a short list of records I brought to a desert island, that would be on it. I don't know what to say beyond that. It's timeless. I mean, it's like real heavy. It's a great record.
That's funny. I
maybe that's not what you were expecting.
No,
it's not a metal record at all.
That's actually great. Like, and well, and heavy is the part that actually, like, I was explaining
it
to someone.
It has emotional heaviness.
Well, and sure. Heavy isn't always distortion. Like, Diamanda Gloss is heavy. Like,
yeah,
it's a different kind of heavy. But
exactly.
So I completely get that.
And I would put her discography on the Desert Island list probably. It's great. I mean, I there were months where I would just listen to that over and over, and I go through phases where I just like, I'm in like a King Cruel phase right now, like just listening to that dude's records. Like, I just get into these weird little niche spots more than ever because I have fucking Spotify to ruin my life,
right?
And I'll just burn these records to the ground. But Joanna Newsom's always had a big place for me. you know, ever since I first found her music. Yeah, one of a kind for sure.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for fucking taking time to... I knew this would be easy. You and I have easy conversations, so I was like... I actually was like, I'm not even making them questions. I'll just fucking call this dude.
Yeah, I didn't even, like, think about it. You know, sometimes I'll, like, drink a coffee before a podcast just so, like, I'm kind of, like, not, like, dead to talk to. Because sometimes I'm just feeling off, you know? But right. I was like, fuck it, I'm talking to Danny. It doesn't fucking matter.
Right.
I'm going to be on. I know it. Like, it's someone I can talk to at least.
Right.
And you never know. Like, sometimes with these bands, with the band stuff, like, when the record's about to come out, they make you do, like, a ton of interviews, especially with Relapse. And sometimes you talk to people that you gel with, and sometimes you sound like a moron, and you're just, like, nervous about every single one of them.
Right.
Well, and Spencer doesn't like to do interviews. So, like, this last time, I let him do a bunch, but, like, I took the brunt of it because I knew he didn't like to do it. And it was just like, holy fuck, how many times do I have to answer the same questions? Like, when the Merzbow record came out, bro, I had to tell, like, 100 different journalists, how did you meet Merzbow? And I still have to answer that question. And it's just like, I don't know. It doesn't matter anymore.
That is crazy. I'm not going to ask that question. Full of Hell, I'm on another end of it though. When you started Full of Hell, I mean, there's no way you looked down that and said, "Oh yeah, one day Justin Broderick's going to do a remix of our song and we're going to do a full record."
Never.
With Merzbow.
None of this shit.
I mean,
dude,
that shit's got to be surreal.
Dude, there's like, I could make a long, my hand would be cramping if I wrote you a list of things that I think are unbelievable that we get to do. Even today, like, just like some of the tours that we're supposedly getting to do, I'm just like, what more would I ever want? This right. is perfect. And the Merzbow thing, it's like, I probably would have, I'm glad I didn't know any better, because I don't know, that record was really challenging to do, and you know, it was really polarizing for people. Merzbow fans were not super happy. Merzbow was happy though, so that's, Masami liked it.
Yeah, fuck what his fan. If he was happy, then that's all that matters. And I think it's fucking amazing that he did that record. And I remember distinctly also not being able to believe it was real, being like, holy, you know, like, that's some lofty fucking shit.
Well, that was the moment. That was the moment where I was like, all right, now we're actually going to make waves. And what I didn't realize was, all right, this is a bigger spotlight on you guys, and now you've never had shit talk before. Well, now you're going to have shit talk from now on. And it's not... We don't really get much shit talk at all. It's pretty minimal. I mean, and it's enough where, like, our skin is thicker nowadays, but, like, it's very minimal. And I think part of it is because even if people don't fuck with the music we're making, they at least most of the time understand that our intentions are pretty honest. So they're just like, you know, yeah, the music is, like, super whack poser shit, but they're nice guys and they're just doing what they like. So I'll leave them alone. You know what I mean?
Right.
So... I think being good people has, like, benefited our egos a little bit from being too beat the fuck up, you know?
Right. Well, fuck. Awesome,
man. But, dude, thank you.
No, thank you.
It was an honor to be on the podcast.
Yeah, it was an honor to bumble through this with you, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. All right, I'll let go. Take it easy.
All right, take care, man. Bye.